Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're rolling out the swag this week. I got the new gear happening out online. Make sure you're checking that out. Big appreciation to our friends at Strategic Factory for putting that together. Shout out to Keith. I know he's excited after Monday night. Our friends at Taharc are delivering this delicious ice cream in the little pink box. 8 pints, $15.70 off. Use the Baltimore Positive passcode, the Caramel Apple Crisp. I highly recommend it. I can show you that I recommend it because it's empty. Apple butter ice cream with oat streusel and salted caramel swirl. Yeah, that sucks. Get 8 of these, $15.70 off. Make sure you're using the code. It is Jacksonville week. I remember back, I was single, it was 25 years ago, chasing Jaguars cheerleaders around and their crazy mascot and the Jag rag and the sun setting over the bridge in beautiful Jacksonville and Coach Coughlin in town, the whole deal. And I've gotten to know so many people in Jacksonville through all these years. Sam Cavara is going to join us here later on in the week with the great Woodlawn Baltimore roots. But every time I'm talking to Jacksonville people, they're either having a GM coach or a head coaching search. All due respect to Jack Del Rio, my pal. Michael DeRocco joins us. He is ESPN DeRocco doing the end of the year, cleaning out the notebook, figuring out it all. Mike, I'm always worried about the future of the franchise there. So I'll open up the biggest can of worms so, we get together and talk about. But, things weren't so bad so long ago, right? Like a couple years ago, you guys were the good team. We were getting our ass kicked over in London and, you talk about something that really set the franchise in a different direction. That butt kicking over in Wembley changed the fortunes, maybe at both of the franchises to some degree, right?
Yeah, that was, 2017, and it seems so, so long ago. But, Lamar arrives in Baltimore, and there is the biggest difference is the Ravens have the quarterback and the Jaguars don't, and they're searching for one, it seems like, every single year, and that's where they're headed. This year is them. But yeah, look, this team was 10 minutes away from going to the Super Bowl. It was stopping Tom Brady on 3rd and 18 in the fourth quarter, and they're probably playing the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And maybe everything the last 2 years and this year is totally different. Who knows? But it's been a really, really quick fall, and now they're the second worst team in the league. And depending on the day, they might be worse than the Jets.
Well, yeah, the Jets are XFL-ish at this point, relegated or something. Give me the 50,000 foot on the franchise, right? With Shad Khan, and look, man, I go way back, right? Like me and Dave Lamb have smoked cigars together on the veranda and talked about Bob Irsay landing down at the Gator Bowl, right? I'm 52. I know I look a little younger than that, but I remember all of that. And I was the guy literally sitting over at Bo Hager's, which was a famous bar on the east side. I was single then, with a big vat of champagne on ice, waiting for Paul Tagliabue to give Baltimore the franchise. And he came out of the hat and said, Jacksonville, right. So, I go back through all of this. It really is amazing. Not just what happened in St. Louis, right? What Nashville has become and what Memphis wasn't, but that whole ball of wax 25 years later as to what the Jaguars are, and I've now seen them play on two continents, right? I'm always worried, and every time I see the Chargers play now, I think that's going to be the saving grace to keep the Jaguars in Jacksonville, because to me, they're running around in those blue pajamas on Sunday afternoon. And I'm thinking they are just so primed to be the London Monarchs. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you, if Shad Khan had been able to go through with his purchase of Wembley Stadium 2 years ago, I think it was, then, maybe I would see a little bit more angst, at least in Jacksonville here, about them potentially moving. But honestly, at this point, where are they going to go? Because they're talking here that they're going to need to do some stadium renovations, some major stadium renovations within the next 5 years or so. Their lease ends up in 2030, so they want to try and work some of that stuff out. They'll need some renovations, really, before the league will approve any kind of stadium lease. But in terms of relocation, the thing I always ask is, well, where are they going to go? You're not going to go to Oakland because that stadium's a dump. You're not going to go to St. Louis because that stadium has issues. And the reason the Rams are no longer in St. Louis is because that stadium had issues. Stan Kroenke would rather go out to LA and build himself his own stadium. And then what, where else is out there? Maybe Toronto. I mean, I don't
know.
Well,
the European model's difficult because of transit and but look, the league played a game without a quarterback 2 weeks ago. They made my team, who lost half their players and went off the cliff on a bus, they made the team still go play on Wednesday. I don't think they give a rat's ass about any of the competition committee issues. You know, let's talk about the revenues. And, you know, they put another team in Frankfurt. To me, that's where the money's going to be in the aftermath of this pandemic, you know. And I think everybody's going to be cash grabbing to make numbers on the back end of this. I mean, I'm in a baseball city. And by the way, Mike, and I'm assuming you love baseball as well, but we're in year 30 of a 30-year lease with the Orioles. The Orioles are like going into the last year of a lease. And one of the questions is, well, where the hell would they go? They can't figure out what to do with Tampa and Oakland yet. Well, you know, there's always a Nashville. There's always a Baltimore. There's always a Jacksonville. There's always a Portland. There's always somebody, right? And I don't know who that suitor would be in the middle of the plague. I'm just wondering if football's ever going to work in Jacksonville in the way that the Sun King, Paul Tagliabue, really wanted it to work. You know what I mean? The way it was supposed to work, the way I thought it was going to work when I was down there in the late 90s and there were eight teams in our division or whatever it was, you know?
Right.
Watching Eric Zier trip on the goal line over himself, you know?
I'll say this. Look, when they came in the mid 90s and into the late 90s, early 2000s, they were good. They were packing the stadium. And it was fantastic. They had their run a little bit in the mid 2000s where they weren't great, but they were still getting some crowds. And then it got to be really pretty bad. And you had the blackout issue. But the bottom line is if this team in 2017, the fans were back, they were winning. They were tired of it had been a decade of losing. In 2018, at least until it fell apart, the fans were there. So the bottom line is they've got to win.
But it's more about corporate support down there, isn't it? I mean, you know.
I mean they do a pretty good job of dealing. I mean, they've got, you know, they've got a dog park. They've managed to sell a lot of sponsorships, and they've cross-marketed into London, into the UK with some marketing things there.
We don't see that, but there's a lot of money there. I mean, when I was there, it was very, very obvious how robust the NFL shield is in Europe. I mean, it was eye-opening. It really was.
Yeah, and the Jaguars have an interesting, at least through this year anyway, I mean, they don't have any games contracted to play over in the UK after this year. That's something that they'll obviously start working on soon. As soon as the pandemic kind of slows a little bit, I guess. But, you know, they have an interesting marketing deal over there. They're able to sign their own marketing contracts over there, and they get all that money for themselves. So they're not splitting that with the league. So it's an interesting arrangement they have with the league. The league wanted a team over there. They wanted a team that was willing to go over there and play because there was a ton of pushback from other teams in the league. And now we're to the point where other teams want to go over there and play for a game. They don't want to go over there and stay. But, you know, the logistics of doing that over there is just it's crazy. Players don't want to be based over there. Maybe one day it'll work out. I really don't see it. But, man, the bottom line is they got to win. If they win here and if they can turn things around with this new GM, potentially a new coach, and whether it's Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or Kyle Trask or Trey Lance, whoever it is, if they can just turn things and start being a team that's competitive every year in the AFC South, which isn't exactly a bang up division here, then the crowds will come back. That's the bottom line is they've been so, the fans have been so beat down with losing and losing badly and not being competitive that the only thing that really is going to get them back is winning games and a guy like a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields, somebody the whole community can finally embrace.
Mike DiRocco joining us here from Jacksonville. He's smarter than us. He lives where the weather's good, and there's a beach around the corner and palm trees and golf courses and all that good stuff and a wide open space. As you can find him at ESPN DiRocco out on Twitter and following all things Jaguars. Somebody has to take the abuse of covering them at this point. Give me a little primer on Lamar and where you are on the Ravens and on the league itself. I mean, you get to watch all of this stuff happen. You talk about your own division and where Deshaun Watson might be one day and where the Colts might be. And I guess from our perspective, trying to get healthy, trying to look at this Jacksonville game. We got the Giants next week. We have the Bengals after that. This feels like a little 3-week preseason ramp up into the playoffs that the Ravens just need to take care of business. make a case for me that the Jaguars could beat the Ravens this week.
Ooh. If Lamar's not playing, if he has cramps and has to stay out in the locker room the whole day, that's basically their best shot, to be honest with you. This team is going to get a little bit of a jolt from Gardner Minshew being back in the lineup. But the bottom line is this defense, while it has played better over the last six or seven games since the bye, mobile quarterbacks have killed this group. And Lamar Jackson is going to be able to do whatever he wants. I mean, they're so beat up in the secondary as well, down three of their top five corners. I can see Lamar having one of those days where, you know, he's got two or three touchdown passes. He's got over 100 yards rushing. You know, it could be really, really ugly. And then you add in the whole Calais Campbell factor and playing against his former team, and this offensive line, especially on the edge, hasn't played very well. And the Jags pass rush has been anemic, and their best pass rusher, Josh Allen's on IR. They're not going to get any pressure on Lamar. And if they're able to get in his face and he gets outside, it could be a long, long day. I mean, you see it every week. I mean, if you don't contain him and make him beat you from the pocket, you got almost no chance to win this game. And that's what I think is going to happen.
What's going on there the last couple of years? I mean, I saw Jalen Ramsey's act out in L.A. last year after the game, and he and Marcus Peters are going to fight each other on the field after they got their ass kicked by 50 points, and I'm 10 feet away from it, listening to all that going on in the aftermath. And, you know, I've had Eugene Monroe around. You know, I'm just trying to think of the people. I mean, Jack Del Rio worked there for a long time. I mean, just sort of in and out of what's going on there, that they drafted a bunch of players and they had a quarterback that then they didn't, and they've gone through coaches. What's the management story there on what the last 5 years has looked like and how much it's deteriorated from almost going to a Super Bowl, as you pointed out, to all of a sudden they can't beat anybody but the Jets?
Right. It's been, I mean, we could spend an hour on this, but the highlight or the low light, depending on how you want to phrase it, they've had no success in the first round. Okay. They continually pick in the first round because they have no success in the first round. So it's that vicious cycle type of thing. But if you just look, Dave Caldwell, the recently fired GM, his first year was 2013. Let's look at his first round picks. Luke Jokel, number two overall, not even in the league anymore. 2014 was Blake Bortles. We all saw how that ended. 2015 was Dante Fowler. Tears his ACL his first year and then becomes an average player, a headache, and they trade him to the Rams. 2016 was Jalen, fantastic player. They messed that up with that relationship with him, and it got to the point where they couldn't. It was untenable, and he wasn't going to play here anymore. So
I think that may be an issue anywhere he was going to play. But
he had massive, massive issues with Tom Coughlin, who obviously was fired last year after the NFLPA said, look, the Jags are fining people so much for stuff they can't find them. If you're a free agent, don't even bother going there. Then you go into 2017. Well, let's see. Who was drafted in the first round in 17? Oh, yeah, that was Watson. Oh, yeah, Mahomes. Jags didn't take either. They took Leonard Fournette. They cut him this year before the season began for an undrafted rookie who's been really, really good. 2018, Taven Bryan, the defensive tackle. They picked him 28th or 29th, I believe. He's been a huge bust, an absolute bust. 2019, Josh Allen, 10.5 sacks as a rookie, benefited from Calais Campbell and Yannick Ngakoue on both sides. But he had 2.5 sacks this year before he got hurt. He's not going to play probably the rest of the year. So 2020, C.J. Henderson at 9. He gets hurt. He's gone for 2/3 of the year. And then Kalyvon Chaisson at 20 has been really, really disappointing, although he's gotten some pressures the last couple of weeks. No sacks, some pressures. So maybe he's starting to come around. But they're playing him out of position in the defense that they're running right now. So if you miss on those first-round picks, you're going to continue to play – if you miss on those high first round picks, those guys were all top 10 picks except for Taven Bryan. You miss those guys, then you're chasing mistakes, and you cannot catch up if you're chasing draft mistakes with high picks in the first round and you keep missing. You just can't.
Well, the other thing is you attract someone like Campbell there and Ngakoue. Now they're in Baltimore. You know, these are the decent character guys, hardworking guy. I mean, in the case of Campbell, man of the year kind of, that they've allowed some good people to get out of the building after it was a hard time to get good people in the building, maybe because people like Jalen Ramsey were around. I don't know. But it feels to me like if you're trying to build anything, you don't let the good people get out of your building too.
Right. And that's the bottom line. That's the other part of it. You know, what you want to draft a guy like Yannick Ngakoue in the third round, a guy who has a chip on his shoulder and exceeds all expectations.
He a Terp.
Yeah, and could be a fantastic, could be one of your core players. You want to draft a guy like that in the third round and have him turn into a Pro Bowler and then go ahead and reward him. But again, the same thing with Tom Coughlin. The relationship between him and the franchise just deteriorated to the point where there was no way he was going to play here. Look, go back, Allen Robinson. They neglected the franchise Allen Robinson after his fourth year, after the 2017 season. Should have franchised him, should have kept him here, but they let him walk. And then they re-signed Marquise Lee, who since re-signing, I think played 12 games with the Jags. I mean, he was hurt, lost a year, serious knee injury. They just don't make the right decisions on who to retain and who not to retain. And in Calais's example, you know, he was due to make over $15 million this year. The Jags were trying to clean up the salary cap. So that was one of the guys that they said, you know what, we'll try and do you a solid. We'll try and trade you to a contender, but we just cannot take that salary cap hit this year. So, you know, they've decided to go young, and here we are, 1-12, 12 consecutive losses.
Michael DiRocco painting a beautiful picture for a lovely Sunday afternoon for Baltimore Ravens fans here this weekend. You know, you've been a road warrior. You're doing this a long time, and I don't know you as well as I know some of the people in Jacksonville. This has been the strangest year just for old sports writers like us, right? Like, I had missed before this year 7 Ravens games in the history of the organization. 4 of them were my wife was battling cancer back in 14 and 15. A couple handful, like a Y2K game. I opted out of a late season game in Seattle 1 year, but I don't miss football games. And I've only gone to 3 this year. I've only gone to the road games. Luke uses our one seat in the home press box. I went to Houston. I sat on the roof for an empty stadium. We played in DC and we played in Philly, and I drove, and it wasn't about driving or flying. It was about, like, in Washington, the press box, the seat is so bad you can't see the game. Like, you can't see down in distance very well at all from the corner of the end zone low. And in Philadelphia, I went up there and they let fans in, and I felt sorry for the fans because I felt like it was such a half-hearted experience, you know, in that way. It's been a weird year to experience all of this and cover all of it, right? And I think for some of the franchises, like the Jaguars, are just going to turtle mode. Like, we suck, let's hide, let's go away. There was a lot of that in baseball. You know, like, let's just get it over with. I mean, a lot of the baseball owners didn't even want to play the season, right? Let's just get it over with and get through it. There's a little bit of that. And in a lot of places, the Jets, Jacksonville, the also-ran places these next couple of weeks, they're trying to figure out what's going on for next year, right? Like, there's a lot of work going on, even though it's not playoff work.
Oh, absolutely. Look, GM Dave Caldwell fired 2 weeks ago. That's going to be the big hire in the offseason. They'll let him, whoever they hire as the GM, to make the decision on the coach. And then it's the quarterback. That's the number one priority for this franchise. That's what they're going to deal with. And, you know, the interesting thing is the crowds until last week here in Jacksonville haven't actually been that bad. They were at 25% capacity, so it was just under 17,000. Now, the Steelers game, the Browns games, it was majority Steeler fans, majority Browns games, but as long as you got butts in the building and butts in the seats, I mean, you're still making your money, I guess.
How many years have you covered the Jaguars, just for perspective?
Since 2013. Yeah, I covered the University of Florida for almost 20 years before that. So I have seen good football. I covered Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow, a little bit of Spurrier. I mean, I've seen good football.
We were in the same place at the same time once. I went down to the Swamp in the year the Ravens won the Super Bowl. I saw Florida play LSU there. I mean, when we got back in the league, Mike, I was, you know, in 96. I was just starting the radio station started in 98. Every trip was its own adventure. Like, so whenever I would go to Jacksonville, I saw the Terps play at Florida State. I mean, you call it playing. They lost right. 58-10, you know. But, you know, doing those that trip through the SEC, I mean, I went to the Grove. I went to Tuscaloosa. I've been to Knoxville. So, like, the SEC thing, that really is at the heart of the Jaguars' problem, as I've always seen it, is They're not even number 3 there. They're sort of number 4 behind NASCAR and 2 football teams. And if you put the Florida Georgia game and the cocktail party in there, it falls behind all of that. I've always felt like that Wayne Weaver, the vision he had there, was to turn the college thing. Oh, and it hasn't happened. And I guess that's the disappointment, because that could be a great franchise. It could be a great an NFL awesome place that people want to play and be. It just hasn't turned out to be that. And
because they haven't won consistently, and they don't have the tradition of a place like Cleveland, or you know, a place like Baltimore, any of these other places. I mean, look, you look at the Panthers. The Panthers have won more consistently than the Jags. Not a ton more, but consistently more. And they're not having these same kind of issues. Now, granted, this is a University of Florida town. It's a Gator town. Got a lot of Noles here too. A lot of Seminole fans here too. So Georgia's pretty big here too. But in 2017, when they were winning, and they weren't winning, they weren't going 14-2. They were a 10-6 team. Okay. Played great defense. Didn't really play exciting offense, but they won games. It was, and I've been in Jacksonville since 1988. I came to school up here. So I've been here through their whole existence. After that first 6-7 years of their existence, when they were really good and they had the best record in the NFL in 99 and went to the AFC title game, hosted it here. That was when Jaguar fever was at its height. And in 2017, it felt just like that back then. It really, really did. But between that and 2017, you know, the Gators were rolling, and you had the Tim Tebow factor. He's from Jacksonville. And, you know, you had FSU with a national championship as well. And Jameis, I mean, they weren't winning consistently over that time. And it's a, the thing people don't understand is this is a big stadium. I mean, if you take the temporary seats, you add all the temporary, or excuse me, you take the seats that have been blacked out, it's about 78, 79,000. That's way too big for an NFL franchise like Jacksonville in this market. But they had to keep the stadium that big because of the Florida-Georgia game. They expand that thing to 85,000 every year with some temporary seats.
And it's only because they can't let the RVs in.
Right. Well, and they couldn't compress it to about 55,000, because then you're telling all these Georgia boosters and these Florida boosters, yeah, we can't get you in. And that's a huge economic deal for the city. That Florida-Georgia game is not the game Saturday. It's on a massive week.
You don't need to have a Super Bowl there. You have that.
But it is unbelievable. This city is electric that week, especially when both teams are good. But, you know, they couldn't – the city couldn't risk losing that. So that's why that stadium is the size it is. In reality, they should be playing in a place like Soldier Field. I mean, Soldier Field's, what, 55,000? That's 20,000 less seats in Chicago than Jacksonville. And I think that is part of the problem as well, that there's just so much inventory that if they're not consistently winning, they're not going to fill it up. And then, as you mentioned earlier, too, you know what? We can still go to the beach in September and October. We can still play golf into September, October, November, December. You know, there's so much. There's boating. We got a lot of outdoor community here, hunting. There's so much other stuff to do.
Go down to Ponte Vedra, hit tee shots off 17.
Exactly.
Is what you're doing.
There's so much stuff to do. So if you're the Jaguars and you're not winning, you're not getting those casual fans that would come to the stadium if you were. And look, if they don't win, if they blow the quarterback pick next year, and it's another 5 to 7 years of trying to fix that mistake, it's going to be the same way it is this year, where there's hardly anybody in the stands.
Did you see Petty at the Gainesville Arena that night? He did the reunion show.
I did not.
Yeah. I got, you know, I just, when I think of Gainesville and I think of good music and think it's, you know, Skinner and Petty and 38 Special and good stuff, you know. So if you're down there for any period of time, I also think of oysters too. So at some point, they'll bring me back down to Gainesville, probably right after everybody secedes down there. But hey, enjoy the good weather. I'm sorry for the crappy football. I do hope at some point we all have, tea time again in Wembley, because I enjoyed that trip. The dude that saved my wife's life's over across the pond in Germany. And they love the NFL over there. And I hope we get a game over there. And I hope your team stays. You know, I don't want the Jaguars going away. At this point, after what the Chargers did to San Diego, I'm good with selling them off to any gypsies that want them. You know, they want to play in Moscow. I don't care. But at some point, I'd like to see football work in Jacksonville, because I like the road trip, as I've pointed out, you know.
It really is all about us. We love going to those places. So we want to see it work. You know, look, one of my favorite trips in the SEC and in the NFL is Nashville for the Titans. I used to go up there every other year for Vandy covering Florida. Now I go there every year, except this year, covering the Jags. You know, I love Nashville. I mean, that's my favorite road trip. It really is. It really is all about us when the bottom line is done.
As right? long as I can eat well and get home on time on Monday right. morning to do my job and not get COVID. Mike, I appreciate you, man. Wash your hands, wear a mask, stay safe. You are staying away, right? You're not traveling this year, right?
No, not going anywhere. Now.
It's weird, right? It's watching games on TV, especially yeah. like when I've been in that Cleveland Stadium for 21 years and Monday night, Lamar runs out like Willis Reed. And I'm like, damn, I wasn't there. I canceled right. my flight Sunday morning. I almost went. I'm like, nah, you know, I'm not, you know, I'll just watch it all day. I'm getting lazy, dude. I mean, that's what it is. But I'll be back on the beat. We'll get down there to Yule Lee, and I'll visit with my kindergarten teacher who lives down there. Shout out, Mrs. Wassel. Hey, I appreciate you, Mike. Be well, all right?
All right, thanks for having me. Appreciate
Mike
it.
Mike DiRocco joining us from the worldwide leader, ESPN DiRocco. You can find him out on Twitter. You can find me anywhere a good ice cream is served here. By the way, you can ship ice cream to Jacksonville. Mike do that for Sam Kavaris. Caramel apple crisp. They got the eggnog, the peppermint bark. $15.70 off the 8-pack that I feature here on the set. They deliver right to your door. You got to be there to take delivery because it's ice cream and it melts. The code is Baltimore Positive. My wife's been telling you about it in the ads. I'm telling you about it now. 1 o'clock Sunday, regular football this week. Mike, stop it. Rofo, get me some chicken. 10 pieces, dark, $10. Right at the Rofo on York Road. I saw it. I drove right by it. Right there in Stoneley. You know what I'm talking about. Right by John Eisenberg's house, right? Right where Lock and Fora lives. Exactly. Nasty at WNST.net, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, anywhere the World Wide Web takes you. We can now be found at BaltimorePositive.com.